I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Dr. Kevin Most.
I've got a stomach pain that's low, fungus on my toe, and I need you now.
It's sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Making people better by making medicine better.
Central DuPage Hospital. Call Dr. Most right now.
Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good for a Monday morning.
Did you have a nice weekend?
I did. How couldn't you this weekend?
Now, you say pretty good for a Monday, but I have to say, I'm gonna blow your cover right now. You like your job. You really like your job. You look forward to coming to work.
I really do, to be honest with you.
So Mondays are never a problem for you?
No, they're not. No, actually, I do. I kind of look forward to it. I enjoy it. I'm very fortunate. I work with a great medical staff that makes my job pretty easy. So hopefully no one above me is listening to this right now.
Yeah, you don't want to let management know.
No, they think I work really hard, but yet I got great docs, so it makes my job much easier.
And then you're talking to me. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
All right, I want to ask you something before we get to the topic chosen for today. Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, who seems to be mostly reasonable, in quotes, this weekend said something which, while it may be true on a business model, to me is the heart and soul of the problem with the healthcare insurance battle. And he equated pre-existing conditions with people that have car accidents. The reason your insurance goes up after a car accident is because there's greater risk to the insurance company and greater cost. So why should people who have pre-existing conditions not pay more? Now, there's more to the story than that, but that is essentially his point. And he says nobody's willing to say it, and he said it. Now, and that was yesterday on Meet the Press. Now, while he's not wrong in a pure numbers business sense, this is the absolute, to me, core of the problem with the insurance business and the healthcare business and the cost and the problems we have. Because if that's the underlying feeling among politicians, why are poor people more entitled to have healthcare than people who have pre-existing conditions and might die? In other words, the only people who need to make decisions on taking care of sick people ought to be the healthcare givers, you and the doctors and the hospitals, not people who are looking at a piece of paper and saying, well, this doesn't fit our business.
Well, and you know what? There's a very fine line here, because they're going to say, you know what? It's that person's fault that they have diabetes. They ate too much. They ate inappropriately. That's why they have heart disease. So that side of it, where we make personal choices that affect our health, okay, then put that person in front of a doctor and let them educate them as to what they need to do to get healthy. But people don't choose to get cancer. People don't choose to get high blood pressure.
I'd make the argument, too. People don't choose to get diabetes either. You don't sit down and have a weight problem like most of this country and then end up with diabetes either. So why should we be pulling their insurance?
No. And I'll tell you, that part of it, like you said, is pretty scary. You know, the bill is going to say, oh, no, we're not taking out pre-existing conditions. No, it's in there. But it gives every state the flexibility to limit the coverage for people with pre-existing conditions.
Doc, what worries me, and I think a lot of women too, is that the umbrella under which these pre-existing conditions would fall, many women have fibroid tumors or any the fibroids that, you know, perhaps are on your ovaries. Would they consider that a pre-existing condition just because you are prone to
Hey, nobody
to
told you to
these?
Have ovaries.
You know what I mean? I mean, that is what's scary to a lot of people too, is that certain things that you would never in a million years think would be a pre-existing condition could be considered one.
Exactly. How deep is this link? How deep is it going to go as far as what is going to be determined to be a pre-existing condition that the states can say we will limit our coverage there? And you know what, guys? We couple that fact with them considering block grants, which is even worse when you look at the two. Right now, the federal government and the state each pay in every time someone, a Medicaid patient, sees a doctor. Under this plan right now, they're going to give, here's Illinois, here is your pile of money. This is how much you spent last year with a little bit of an increase, and now you use that appropriately to treat these patients.
And when it's gone, it's gone.
Exactly. When it's gone, it's gone. It falls all back on the state, and the state is going to say, whoa, we have to cut back on things.
Yep.
And whether it's women with fibroid tumors or it's people with mental health, there is going to be cuts, and that is going to be devastating to us.
And what's the biggest problem? The biggest problem going forward, we're going to live longer. People are living longer, and as people get older, think about the crash we have coming. people are getting older. We have less doctors and less healthcare at a higher cost than ever. Right. You think that's a problem? And these geniuses are figuring it out? Come on.
Steve, it even gets worse than that. Most hospitals run on a very, very, very thin margin. I mean, a lot of hospitals are at a deficit every year. Most of them are on single-digit margins. So they make a little bit of profit, which they then roll back into the hospital to improve it. With this thing, you are going to see many hospitals close. You have hospitals in the city that take care of a vast majority of their patients are Medicaid, and now they're going to get cuts.
And many
they can't afford it.
And many of the programs too, right, Doc, for mental illness, substance abuse, rehab, and a lot of these veterans programs too.
Absolutely. You know, you're starting to see a lot of the social services, especially in the state of Illinois, with the current state that we're in right now. You're seeing a lot of those people that are doing these great social services for mental illness, for substance abuse, that are getting out of that business. And when some funding does happen to come, if the state gets a budget, I'm sorry, you guys, those individuals have already moved on and have already found other occupations. They're not going to come back and do this.
So, 6:47 on that happy note, please let your senators know, even though I think we know where Durbin and Tammy Duckworth stand, but whether you're listening in Michigan or Iowa or Ohio or Minnesota, I mean, anywhere around the country, let your senators know what you think of this thing being shoved down the Senate's throat this week. And the fact is, you don't have to have a vote by Thursday, so they have a story to tell when they go home. It's not about the politics. It's about the reality, and it's outrageous that that creep Mitch McConnell is pulling another stunt. All right, we've got to come back. Talk about Marian Hossa's situation, because I think people are intrigued about what's happened to him and playing some of the best hockey of his amazing career, and now he's got to step back for at least a year. Anybody else notice the BET Awards were on 14 channels last night?
Was it good? I didn't get it.
Yeah, but I wasn't invited. I should have been there.
You always get invited to that, don't you?
Usually, yeah. I'm sure it was just, you know, slip of administrative issue or some sort. Dr. Kevin Mostry joins us now. Doc, all right, let's talk about Marian Hossa here. Yep. This caught a lot of people by surprise, including people who are pretty close to the hockey community. And it's not completely rare in hockey, but it's still unusual. What do we know? I know you haven't examined him, but what do we know of what he's dealing with?
Yeah, you know, we talked in the past about contact dermatitis when people get exposed to, like, poison ivy. So this is somewhat similar to it, we assume. You know, like in hockey, they're going to be very tight about what the medical condition is, so they don't tell you exactly the diagnosis, but you can assume, and especially, like you said, knowing historically that other players have had this. But essentially what it sounds like he has is he has, whether it's an allergy to his equipment or whether it's a skin condition, that when his skin gets broken down because of contact with the equipment, it gets inflammation. And for him, it's gotten to a point where it's either so unbearable from a symptom point of view of itching and breakdown of the skin, or it's because the medication that he's on, which is what they alluded to, get to a point where you have to be careful about the rest of your life. Being on long-term steroids to keep your skin condition under control is not good. End up with cataracts, end up with diabetes, end up with osteoporosis. Bad things happen when you're on some of those medications for a long time.
So the cure is worse than the condition at some level, maybe. But what I've heard, and I think one of a former either Hawk or NHL player discussed this on Channel 9, is that you're taking a shower after a game and it's like needles coming out of the shower head. And you can't sleep because you're not comfortable in any position. And here you're lucky enough to play this game, in Hossa's case, for 20 years. And again, last year, what, 26 goals or something?
Yeah.
On fire coming out of the gate. It's not like the Hawks don't want him around. And he wants to play more hockey, and he's certainly got more hockey in him. But, you know, all the subjects or all the things you just mentioned have led up to, we've got to figure this out. And he can't play hockey while we're figuring it out.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, not only is a great player, but you've seen in interviews, and you know him. But, I mean, here's a humble guy who really is great for the sport, so doing anything we can to get him back there is great. And you're starting to see more and more sports equipment teams put some protective layer between the equipment and the player. So will that work out for him? You know, you hope it does, but they practice so much and play so much that when that skin breaks down and you have skin and sweat and broken down skin that would, that's been irritated and now exposed to the dye in the uniforms or chemicals that are on the equipment, and that skin's just going to get inflamed. It's kind of surprising that more people don't get it, and I'm sure that there's a lot of hockey players that do get it, even young kids. But keeping it under control is the big thing.
What about regular people? Do you see this in the regular population where people are, I don't know how to put this, I guess, allergic to their clothes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially now you're starting to see it more because we're getting more high-tech clothes. We're getting clothes that have SPF in them. We're getting clothes, sports clothes, that have antifungal medication embedded in them. You're seeing more and more clothes with dyes. You're seeing more chemically produced clothes instead of natural cottons. So absolutely, clothing is definitely one. But we get exposed to it all the time. Something as simple as the little sheets that you put in the dryer to make your clothes smell better and you know, softener. Very irritating to the skin in some people. So we always, that's one of the first questions we ask when someone comes in, they got a rash all over. It says, have you changed your detergent or have you changed your softener? Because it's a very common one.
I'm told that the extreme treatment for this steroid you mentioned, and maybe steroids are the underlying ingredient for this, but it's not dissimilar to chemotherapy in its worst cases. And that kind of hardcore treatment, as you said, over the long term is actually dangerous. So if you get to that point, and by the way, we're not talking about Jose, we're talking about the big picture.
Yep.
What do you do medically?
Well, it's,
or does it get better if you're no longer doing the thing? I mean, you got to wear clothes.
Correct. If you stay away from whatever the irritant is, it's going to get better. But like you said, you know, we're talking about all of these new drugs where we're trying to convince the body how to fight an infection or how to fight an irritation. And now we have drugs that we're saying we want to turn that off. We want to turn that suppression off. So it is interesting, and it does get to the point of, you know, the old saying, well, doc, it hurts when I do this. Well, then don't do that. So it's going to be wear some different clothing. Don't get in that situation where you have sweating, irritation to the skin, and direct contact with any chemicals or dyes.
Doc, do you hear oftentimes with an allergy, especially with young kids, people say, well, they'll outgrow it. Is that possible, or is that just a wives' tale?
No, you know, you will, quote unquote, outgrow some allergies. Some kids actually can outgrow asthma, but we have to realize that asthma is due to inflammation, and as their airway gets better, and if we can decrease the inflammation, that they may get over their asthma. Some childhood asthma moves on. But some of the other things, you know, like you say, well, I'll tell you one in females, it's really common. Girls will buy cheap jewelry that has nickel in it, mm-hmm. and nickel is a huge irritant to the skin. They're not going to outgrow that, but they're going to start buying better jewelry that's not going to have nickel. So some of it you will, quote unquote, outgrow, but for the vast majority, it's going to be to avoid it versus try to outgrow it.
And over the past couple of months with my many medical friends that I've come in contact with, I got in a conversation with one about doctors developing an allergy to latex late in their career. I mean, after 20 years, suddenly there's a latex allergy. How does the body not know that earlier?
Yeah, that was really interesting. As a matter of fact, we had a great general surgeon here by the name of Rich Jorgensen, who now is the coroner for DuPage County and has done great work with opioid use abuse here in DuPage County. But he was a phenomenal surgeon that developed an allergy to latex. He couldn't wear gloves in the operating room and had to retire from that. Fortunately, he's been able to put his career to something very powerful in DuPage County with opioids. But here he is, a love of the game for the surgeon, and being told, you can never do surgery again. There's so much latex in the surgical area. Now, if a patient comes in and they're latex allergy, we have all the equipment to take care of them. But on a day-to-day basis, it's impossible for a surgeon to practice.
Well, you got, but you mentioned opioids. That's the other thing in the Senate health care bill that is not completely clear at this point, how big an impact there would be on opiate programs around the country and whether or not that's going to be enough to kill the bill or whether these senators are doing enough to take that into consideration, because you've said it here many times, opioid addiction in this country is rampant, and we ignore this. We're asking for a world of hurt like we don't even know at this point.
Yeah, people don't realize and understand how big this issue is. And it used to be just, oh, these are heroin users in the cities. And I'm sorry, it's not. These are 15-year-old, 20-year-old, 60-year-olds in the suburbs of DuPage County and Barrington and wherever.
These are people you know. These are your neighbors. These are people you work with. These are people you know.
Yep. We've got to get our arms around this.
Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. Thank you, sir.
You got it. We'll talk to you soon.